Good afternoon, and welcome to the task force to consider impediments to fair housing. My name is Larry Butler. I'm state representative from the 72nd District from Waterbury, also the co-chair of the housing committee. And I see a lot of familiar faces here, representatives and other housing advocates. With me also is my co-chair, Senator Dante Bartolomeo, on the Housing Committee, but also I have here the co-chair of this task force. Sharing that duty with me is Orlando Rodriguez. So again, I'd like to welcome you all. The purpose of this meeting is pretty much organizational type thing to introduce ourselves to each other. Also, what we'd like to do is just throw out some ideas of some basic ideas that we should consider that are impediments to fair housing. So with that said, I'm going to entertain comments from my co-chair of the task force, and then we'll follow that up by going clockwise around the room, introducing ourselves. So without further delay, Mr. Orlando Rodriguez.
Thank you, Representative Butler. And I am so excited to be on this committee. You know, housing is such a crucial issue for everyone. We all have to live somewhere. And I'm with Connecticut Voices for Children, and we're particularly concerned on the issues of affordability to low-income families and children. And we're looking forward to having some real tangible outcomes as part of our discussion. I would like to just start off by giving something to think about, just throwing it out there. Okay. Okay. Would we start with Alyssa and go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves?
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to join your group. My name is Alyssa Norwood. I work with the Connecticut Association of Directors of Health. It's the nonprofit professional association for Connecticut's 74 local health directors in the state of Connecticut, serving all of Connecticut's residents. I was appointed by Representative Ara Simowitz to serve in my capacity as having some knowledge on health equity. And specifically, our organization drafted the following policy brief about a year ago entitled Housing and Planning for a Healthy Public, that particularly looked at the impacts of a healthy housing unit or lack thereof on health, and then its placement within a community, access to areas of physical opportunity, healthful food, and just generally healthy eating and active living. So I look forward to working with you.
Hi, my name is Erin Kempel. I'm the executive director of the Connecticut Fair Housing Center. My agency, along with Erin Boggs, has been writing the analysis of impediments to fair housing for the state of Connecticut. We hope to have that out sometime in November and are looking forward to working with the committee on ways to overcome the impediments that we will identify. Thank you.
My name is Erin Boggs, and I was till recently with the Connecticut Fair Housing Center, and am now launching a new nonprofit that will work to create an urban, suburban, interracial coalition to support exactly the issues that we're dealing with today. Sort of the difference in opportunity resources available to people who are living in different areas and the racial impact of that. And I'm excited to be on the task force.
Good afternoon. My name is Alex Knopp. I had the privilege to serve in the state legislature from 1987 to 2001, where I was co-chair of the Housing Committee and GAE Committee and a few others. I left here to become mayor of Norwalk, which I did for two terms, and currently have two primary roles that I think bring me to this committee, and I'm grateful for Senator Looney's appointment. One is I teach education funding at the Yale Law School Clinic, and second, I serve as the plaintiff's representative to the State Department of Education for the Sheff versus O'Neill landmark Connecticut school desegregation case. And in all of those roles, what's become clear is that the impact of integrated schools and integrated housing on student achievement is really no longer debatable. And we've had tremendous results from the Chef case of increasing student achievement, and that classrooms of mixed race, mixed income, mixed ethnic backgrounds really have shown great promise in closing the achievement gap. And I hope that as a task force we can focus on some new and innovative ways to look at education and fair housing together. Also want to say I'm at the law school in the legislative clinic. I have the privilege to work with a number of very talented students, and one of them is going to be working with me on this task force. I'd like to introduce Alexander Taubes, who's sitting back here, and he'll be attending the meetings with me and going over the materials, and I look forward to your giving him a good educational and legislative experience from the task force. Thank you.
My name is Fred Stula. I'm the Associate Director of Development at HARC. It's a nonprofit that serves people with intellectual disability here in Hartford. The main reason I'm on this task force is from 04 to 2011, I was the clerk for the Housing Committee. So I have a bit of institutional knowledge that hopefully can benefit everybody.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Senator Dante Bartolomeo, and I represent the District 13, which is Meriden, Middletown, Middlefield, and Cheshire. And as Representative Butler said before, I co-chair the Housing Committee. And separate from that, I'm also the co-chair of the Children's Committee, and I'm on Education, and I'm on Public Health Committee.
State Representative Bill Lehman from the 14th District, which is the town of South Windsor. I'm also a ranking member on the Planning and Development Committee, so almost anything this task force does will flow through both Housing and the Planning and Development Committee if it's going to become law. The other thing is that I am a home builder by trade, and hopefully will be contributing some of the practical, this is what's actually going to happen despite your good intentions of the proposals that are going forward. Very often, I think that a group like this doesn't really understand what the private sector, who is actually building and remodeling and redoing homes, how they're going to interpret your regulations. I'll go back just to the unintended consequences. In the mid-90s, we just started talking about lead paint and the problems with lead paint. I don't think there's anybody in the world that doesn't think lead paint is a problem and was a problem. I was at a meeting of about 300 builders, many of them who owned apartment houses and who owned three families, six families. The presenter of the center got up and said, how many of you currently own homes, housing units that were built before 1979? And about three quarters of the hands went up. And he said, I have one piece of instruction for you. Tomorrow morning, list those units for sale. You do not want to own them. The result of that was a tremendous number of very good landlords realized the potential liability, sold their properties to future slumlords, exactly what we did not want to have happen. And again, it was all out of good intentions, but that was the real result. So I am, again, looking forward to this committee.
Representative Jay Case of the 63rd District, servicing Winchester, Torrington, Goshen, and Colebrook. Nice northwest corner where it snowed last night. Part of Appropriations Committee, Environment, and Energy, and my favorite one, which is my background, which is Human Services, and I studied families with disabilities and making sure that the people with disabilities have the proper housing and the proper place to go. I am the former Director of Development for Special Olympics Connecticut, so my heart is in it so that everybody has the same abilities and to get the housing that they need, and that's why this has really sparked up an interest to make sure people get what they need. I presently serve on the Primetime House Board of Directors, which also helps people get fair housing and allows them not to be discriminated against so that everybody has the right to have what we have. So that's why I'm here. So I look forward to the conversations.
Jason Rojas, representative from East Hartford and Manchester, the 9th House District. I co-chair the Planning and Development Committee. Also serve on the Education Committee as well as the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. The legislation that led to this task force came through the Planning and Development Committee. And as I am increasingly interested in housing policy, I became aware of this analysis to fair housing, which I had never heard of prior to, and began to ask the question, well, what happens with all the wonderful work that goes into a document like this? Where does it go? And sometimes a lot of very good documents, a lot of good work goes into them, come into this building, and often don't go a lot of places. And I wanted to provide an opportunity for us to have a bit more focus on the good work that's going into the analysis to see if we can come out with some solid recommendations around housing. In particular for me, I'm interested in the connection between housing and education and the achievement gap, particularly in the context of CHEF, being that I represent East Hartford and Manchester. A lot of the same conditions that resulted in CHEF happening are beginning to manifest themselves in East Hartford and Manchester's of the world, yet CHEF continues to be myopically focused on Hartford, and I'm hoping to bring some more attention and perspective to that issue before we have to engage in perhaps more litigation or perhaps even more money in trying to address the issues in the East Hartfords and Manchesters of the world when those conditions have long outgrown the places like Hartford, without taking away any attention on the serious issues that continue to be in Hartford, too. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Now, I'm going to start with my co-chair, and what I'd like to do is to list a couple areas, or a few if you have them, high-level areas that you think are areas that we need to consider that are impediments to fair housing. And we're just going to start with my co-chair, and we're going to go around the room. I know some of you have spoken about some of your concerns in your introductions, but so as it's coming around, you could take some notes and be prepared to give us your couple items. And Aaron Kimple, look forward to your report coming out next month as well. So, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Rojas, thank you for the segue onto the AI report, because what I wanted to ask was Aaron Kimple when she thinks a report will be ready. And I worked in software development once, and we used to have a saying, you know, when you're writing software and you ask for a deadline, you can pick the month or you can pick the year, but you can't pick both. Okay? So I understand, I don't want to put you down, tie you down to any one day, but realistically, that, you know, that report is going to provide a lot of background information. I wonder, you know, when can we expect to see it?
So I've been meeting, I want to say daily, but that would be only a tiny bit of an exaggeration, with the Department of Housing to make revisions, and we have a deadline of finishing the revisions by November 8th. And having the rest of, and having it laid out and published. At this point, we are discussing whether or not to publish, how to publish. So one of the things we're going to do is publish an executive summary that will be generally available, probably be about 20 to 25 pages. The entire report is going to be about 100 to 150 pages. And so the question is what, and it has a lot of data in it, as you know, since you did all the data analysis, and the question is whether or not we're going to publish the full 150 pages, 150 to 200 pages, I guess, as a document, or if it's just going to be available online. And then eventually we also want to have a website that's dedicated to the data so that people in the state of Connecticut can have access to the data that you and Aaron collected as part of the AI.
Okay. So if we were to meet, let's say, second half November, is there a...
I think first week in December is a better...
Okay. All right.
And I would expect that at that point we'd have at least the executive summary, if not the entire report, available to distribute.
Okay. Thank you. As Aaron Kimple mentioned, I've been working on the report, so I have some insight into some of the areas that may concern them, and I'm just going to lay them out there and ask for feedback. The first one is health, housing, affordable housing, and implications for health, and in particular, lead. The impact or the link between K-12 education, access to quality education, and the location of affordable housing. Zoning. How zoning impedes or helps the location of affordable housing, and what incentives there are in funding formulas to enhance educational outcomes racial and social isolation. And finally, one topic that may not be obvious to many of us has to do with children in foster care, because DCF is impacted by the lack of affordable housing when it comes to placing children or putting children back in their families.
The two things that I've heard from landlords and people who own apartments with lower cost housing is the heavy turnover that they're facing of people moving in, short time later moving out. Very often when they move out, rent is due, but it's not enough to try to collect, and the people don't have the money even if you try to collect it. But then the cost of repainting, redoing, getting the unit ready for the next occupant who may or may not be there. I don't know if it's anything the committee can really do because it's a cultural thing that's going on, but it's definitely one of the things that's driving the cost up. A lot of talk about zoning. One of the things that I have seen as a builder is the lot sizes in a particular development, whether they be quarter acre or 1 acre, doesn't make any difference. But almost always they have to be exactly the same size. What that does is it forces a very uniform type of product. I've had customers come to me and say, I'd like to live down the street from my son and daughter so I can see the grandchildren, but all I need is a small house and a small lot. And they have the money. And I can't build a small lot, small house for you in that neighborhood. It's just not allowed. And while that may be an upper-end income problem, the same thing filters right through the system of the zoning pretty much forces a economic ghetto of type of housing, and I don't think that is good at all.
Representative Case? And you don't have to feel compelled to give multiple or any topics at this time. I just want to at least get, you know, baseline for what we're considering. So, but Representative Case.
Thank you, Representative. A few things that really touched me when I was looking at this task force, and I feel very strongly about it, is inspections of affordable housing on an annual basis. Being a past landlord of a building, which I did take a few of the apartments and make them into affordable housing, but I also worked with the people within the places to get them to where that state where they didn't need the assistance, and they've since moved on with their life and it's a success story. I did that with two single mothers, which a child each, and I'm proud of that. I was happy with that. They came into the system, they got out of the system, and that's the way it needs to work. But what's happening is we have a lot of affordable housing out there that we're not going out there, we're not inspecting, so it just keeps rolling over and rolling over and rolling over, and we just keep paying and paying and paying. And I'd like to see some type of an annual inspection. Back in the 80s when I had this building, my local inspectors came in twice a year in order for the HUD funds to be administered to myself. So that's one. Landlords need to be held accountable, obviously. And I think the state dollars that come from Hartford should trigger the inspection because we need to. One of my big things in the House chambers is looking at fraud and looking at things that are going on. Everybody deserves the right to fair housing, but the ones who are not using the system the right way, you know, we need to look at and weed out and make sure those people that are on lists get into places if they're eligible to get into it, and the people who are abusing the system need to move on and move forward. That's basically it. I mean, my motto has always been that everybody that sits next to me, we're all different, we have different abilities, and we all deserve the same chances of each other, and housing is one huge thing because we always need a roof to go home to, and looking at, I'd hate to say in the northwest corner, and one town of mine, there's, so far we've found 25 dens where people are living in the woods, you know, and we need to get those people out, and that's just one town. The second town, we've found 12 dens so far, and it's very disheartening because people don't have phones, they don't have transportation, but they need housing, and people just don't know how to get it, so we need to find affordable housing for these people. we go on to a different part of it with people with intellectual disabilities. I work very closely. I have a brother with intellectual disabilities. I found him housing. He lives in a CTH home, and that home happens to be inspected quarterly, which is interesting. So we treat that differently than others, and but it's kind of good because it makes sure that he has a safe place and a good place to be. So I think there's two aspects when you look at, I was glad to see that you were here, intellectual disabilities and physical disabilities, but we also have to look at the other spectrum of it too. So I'm looking forward to, once again, hearing the results.
Yeah, I kind of laid out kind of my interest in being here, but I would also add, I think, trying to get a better understanding of the Department of Housing's programs. I'm beginning to do the research on my own and read as much as I can, but it would be good to understand how those program works, particularly with all the money that's been committed by the governor to affordable housing and housing investment. I think, you know, this is a good opportunity to get a handle on whether those programs are actually contributing to racial and economic isolation, or are they helping to address it. And I'm not quite sure, but that's something I think we need to identify, and I'm sure the Department of Housing could be in a good position to help at least enlighten us on how their programs work and who they're benefiting and who they're not, and what are the long-term outcomes of the policies that we make on a day-to-day basis.
So from more of a health perspective, our analysis has always looked at the relationship between housing and health at sort of three levels. One relates to the conditions of the individual housing unit itself and its impact on health. Sort of the next level analysis relates to whether or not someone can get housing at a baseline, is it affordable? And then assuming you have a unit in good repair that's affordable, where is it located? Is it in a health promoting area? So sort of addressing each of those three levels with housing conditions, public health has long had successes in the areas of lead, as others have mentioned, and also in indoor air quality. And there are a number of healthy homes interventions, sort of the classic story of public health. You create a good program, you have excellent data to support its success, and the result is that the funding gets cut because the perception is you've solved the problem. So both lead programs as well as programs that promote indoor health quality and address asthma at the individual unit level are facing difficulties in terms of lack of sustainability and funding from the federal government. So at the state level, we need to start thinking creatively about how we continue to sustain some of those successful programs, particularly in the asthma realm. On the affordability side, our organization pioneered a tool called the Health Equity Index, which some of you may or may not be familiar with, but it's an online web-based tool that takes data from a number of different health data sets, compiles them all into one database, and then generates GIS maps where you can look at the neighborhood level at the relationship between a variety of community conditions and then 13 different health outcomes that span the life cycle from cradle to grave. Some of the indicators are years potential life loss, number of emergency visits related to asthma. So you can really start to, at this mapping level, see some of those relationships. And in our analysis, it's not surprising. We found that if you score neighborhoods on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most health-promoting conditions and 1 being the least health-promoting conditions, that most affordable housing is concentrated in the least health-promoting neighborhoods of the state. So that's, of course, problematic, that anyone that's able to afford housing should be able to achieve the same health outcomes or have the same health opportunities as anyone else. And then finally, at that broader placement level, where, and this is the zoning question, do you put affordable housing in a community? There are both real urban and suburban implications for health in terms of where that housing is situated. On the urban side, food access continues to be a real difficulty, making sure that there's access to healthy fruits and vegetables, environmental quality, issues of safety, issues of walkability and access to sidewalks in a neighborhood to be able to live a healthy lifestyle. And then finally, on the suburban side, we've sort of zoned ourselves into a low-density, car-dependent series of land use patterns that can really make it difficult in certain communities, even that are more affluent, to get adequate amounts of physical activity. So those are some of the broad-reaching issues on the health side when I think about fair housing.
To just step back for 1 minute and define the analysis of impediments for people, because it is a very technical term. It was created by HUD. It's not in general use. But the analysis of impediments is really designed to look at all of the forces that go into both the location of housing and access to the housing that currently exists, as well as access to places to put new housing. And so it doesn't just look at affordable housing. It looks at all of the forces that go into all of the issues that impact where people have access to housing. And surprisingly, I think one of the things that we found in our data is that we have levels of segregation both for affluent people and for people who are not affluent. For so across the economic spectrum, we have levels of segregation that are comparable or worse than places like Little Rock, Arkansas, and other places in the South. And so one of the things that I think we need to continue to keep in mind, that while a lot of people who are protected from discrimination do need affordable housing, that's not the only issue that is affecting where people have the ability to live. And the analysis of impediments will really look at that issue across all the spectrums and across all types of housing tenure. So we're not just talking about rental housing, we're also talking about access to homeownership, access to loans, access to the other things that you need in order to have a home. And so I think that there will be a variety of issues that are raised by the analysis. A lot of them do have to do with affordable housing, because it's true that there is a disproportionate need for affordable housing among people in the protected classes, but that's really not the only issue that will be revealed by the analysis. Thank you.
Now, the other thing we might want to think about as a committee is how we are defining fair housing. I think there's a tendency to expand it to beyond what is described in the Fair Housing Act, which identifies certain broad categories. For example, you can't be discriminated based on race. And really it's talking about discrimination and segregation rather than issues of what we might think is something that is fair related to housing. So I would urge this group to really think about fair housing as it pertains to the Fair Housing Act. And going beyond that, I think, is sort of beyond the scope of what we should be talking about. But in terms of the actual barriers that we have seen by doing this report, I think we should spend some time thinking about how best to go through them all, but I'll just list off a few. I may be missing some, and once we get the report, we'll sort of have a full, hopefully a full accounting in front of us. But absolutely zoning. We need to think about how regional planning fits into where people are living, the all kinds of the planning documents we do in the state, the plan of conservation and development, the consolidated plan. Are these things actually encouraging housing to be built, in all, affordable housing in particular, in all places to allow people to truly have choices about where to live? We need to think about discrimination. We found very high levels of discrimination happening on a regular basis in Connecticut in the report. We need to think about where we as a state are putting our subsidized housing resources. We are overwhelmingly putting our subsidized housing in areas that are struggling and also areas that are disproportionately low income compared to the state as a whole, and disproportionately inhabited by people of color. We need to think about what we're doing with family housing in particular when we talk about affordable housing. A lot of the suburbs have a lot of elderly housing and virtually no family housing. We need to have that in our mind as we think about what kind of housing is needed. And we also need to look at what kind of housing is needed for families in terms of the size of bedrooms. We've got a lot of one-bedroom subsidized housing units going around, when really, if you've got two kids, you probably want three bedrooms. So that's another thing that's out there. And definitely accessibility issues. That's something that there's just not a lot of data out there on in the first place, but we know anecdotally that a lot of people are experiencing difficulties staying in their home and getting the home that they want because they aren't accessible. So those are just a few, but there are many more issues that we need to make sure we cover.
Well, thank you. These have all been really interesting issues. In addition to the education that's already been mentioned, I think one of the opportunities the task force has is to try to figure out, based on what happened in the legislature in the last session, both through the Moore Commission and the legislation through the Planning and Development Committee, to consolidate regional planning districts and to elevate them from some of them from advisory into governance units, CROGS. I think it was probably one of the most significant things done here in the last 50 years. And I think we're going to now be in a period of trying to define what does that mean for a whole series of state services and shared services. And my hope is that there's some opportunity to look at the whole question about regional governance and fair housing, because it may be that it's a little easier to deal with it on the larger scale with many more resources in a CROD than it is on a municipal by municipal basis. Since we don't have counties, we don't have county financing, we don't have county economic incentives, as may be the case in some other states, I think there's trend now to take a look at how we can address critical state issues on a multi-municipal basis through CROGS is an invitation to look at what that means for fair housing, and I really look forward to that discussion. We may not answer the question, but I think the time is really ripe for putting out some principles and models that we might want to be looking at in the next couple of years.
Well, after this many people speak, it's kind of tough to put in anything really new at this point. So a lot of the stuff that Erin's talking about is very important. And I think she covered, all the real important impediments that we need to address. The only thing I want to add is just, I had always kind of worked on like four A's of just affordable housing in general. And it's availability, affordability, accessibility, and also adaptability. I think adaptability kind of fits with people being able to age in place, and also people with disabilities being able to live in homes, and homes being built for people with disabilities to live in, just right off the bat. So, I'm looking forward to working on this, and I hope that, it's not just one of these reports that we just write and just get stuck in a room somewhere. I hope that we can have some action steps for like the legislature to take, or different different tools that we can use to actually address some of these concerns instead of just writing a report to stick in a file somewhere. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to be last. I really don't know what I can add to all of that. I personally really look forward to learning a lot during this group. What I have been working most on in my district recently are issues around homelessness and shelters closing and transitional housing and bringing that funding from transitional housing into permanent supportive housing. In the Middlesex County area, we have quite a crisis right now because we have a home that had 70 beds for transitional housing that's closing. And so we're working kind of on prior to even getting to the opportunity to have fair housing and also some issues around affordable housing. So I look forward to continuing to learn. I've been in the legislature since January, and I've learned a whole lot already, but I realize there continues to be an endless point of an amount of learning. So I'm glad to hear that I'm surrounded by a lot of experts, and I look forward to the committee.
You're right, Fred. By the time it circles around, most everything that you really want to talk about has been already brought forward. I'd just like to add that really coming into it, I try not to put a lot of thought into what I wanted to clearly define. I want to come and be a part of a brainstorming working group of people who have their ideas of what we could work on. And just to add to that, I've seen so many health issues and related to asthma and lead that I really wanted to address. Of course, affordable housing, but one of the things that in a public hearing that we had in the housing committee, it was brought up the notion of the relationship between housing and the achievement gap. And I really, as long as we're doing this, I want to look into that further too. So those are just three areas that I came into thinking about. But we have a whole litany, and I'm going to work with my co-chair on this task force, and hopefully we could have some groupings of some of these ideas. But I think what's key is what the Aaron's came up with here. First of all, to look at defining fair housing and how we want to address it here. So Aaron Box, that's half of it. But the other half is what the other Aaron said is impediments. In your definition of that, when we put the two together, that's our mission, and how all the issues we brought up fits into that definition of the impediments and the fair housing is what I think we really want to capture. So that's what we will do. But I'd be remiss if I didn't introduce Peter from the Clerk of Planning Development. Could you just wave over here? Thank you for your help and helping to get all the people together. You've been invaluable to getting us together, and we actually have looked at our next meeting date, which is next item on our agenda. And so far, considering that the report that's going to be out from Department of Housing is going to be some point in November, we're looking at the first week of December, like December 4th. Wednesday is would everybody be open for that to be our next meeting date? 1 o'clock.
If it's 1 o'clock, it's fine. I teach at 4 o'clock, so that would be
okay. Good. Well, we'll make sure that we get you in early so you could have your say and be on I-91 on your way to New Haven. But yes, so December 4th at 1 p.m. Yes, I don't want to have too prolonged of a meeting. I'm hoping that between meetings, like between now and the next meeting, that any ideas that you thought about after this meeting, and if you want to further define what you've already stated, please send it to Peter. He's the person that actually sent you the invite here. And so please reply to him so he will share with us, and we'll try to kind of put together a manageable agenda, because I don't want to have a very lengthy meeting agenda, if you will. So anybody have any ideas of the length of time?
Well, it partly depends on how many times we want to meet. One thought would be to sort of extract some of the high points of what we all have been talking about and dedicate some real time at a meeting to that, to those issues. So should we have a meeting on zoning and bring in some people who are really experts on zoning, for example? And I think there's a way to break down all the issues covered in that way, but it would be nice to have a sense from the group of how long we're expecting the task force to meet, how often, how many sessions we have.
Yes. Anybody else have any ideas, Representative?
Thank you, Chairman. Real quick, I just had one question for you and then one comment. And the question was, do we have anybody on this task force that is a large Section 8? Have we asked anybody that services a lot of those buildings that the state subsidizes so that we can get some information on their process and how it works for them and what the issues are for fair housing?
Well, I don't know if we have resident expert about Section 8, but I know that any information we want to get, that's what our friends
okay.
at OFA or OLR, the legislative researchers, and some of them are in the room. They're over there. So they're here. But if there's legislative research that you think are facts and figures that will help us, please, if you're a legislator, you could go directly to OLR. And I guess I think Allison McKean is in the room. Could you wave? So don't know. Anyways, and she is assigned to housing, so she could probably help you or direct you to who could get the information.
Yeah, no, I understand getting the information. I just wanted to see if there was somebody that would be willing to come on the task force to give us firsthand information if we had questions on fair housing and that stuff. I know we can gather all the information we want from our groups here, but just to hear it from somebody up front. And I'll leave it at that, and we can talk about that at a later date. And one other thing that I've been working on, serving on energy, which has really moved forward. We did a field trip to a local energy oil company, and one of the suggestions that came out of it was, you know, if we do through fair housing or through the housing committee, offer up some assistance to a home, this company was willing to go out and do a free energy audit and then make the house energy efficient, and therefore we're saving the state money because we're using less oil. So sort of making it a nicer place for people to live at the same time, but making it energy efficient and teaching the people that are living in it. And I've been working on that on myself on the side and hopefully coming forward with it. But good things. Let's keep it going.
Thank you. Free. Love free. Aaron.
You know, on the question of people with expertise in Section 8, I think it would be great to have, you know, part of a session dedicated to Section 8 and have some people come in and talk about different issues related to the program. So maybe that's a way to get at the kind of expertise you're talking about.
Alyssa, then Aaron Kemple.
Thank you again for the opportunity to serve. It's a learning experience for me, too. This is my first time on a task force, and some things that I think would help me so that I can maximally benefit the group. One, when we talked about fair housing, my understanding coming out of this meeting now is that there's both this colloquial understanding of the phrase fair housing, but it's also a very specific legal term of art. So, you know, I have legal background. I can comfortably go and read the statute, but I wonder if the group as a whole might benefit from a readily available summary so that we can understand the frame around which we're operating, just so that we don't go outside of it. And also, I was wondering if there was any thought of developing a very specific work plan or timeline around our work going backwards from our deadline, since time is short, especially with the holidays approaching.
Yes, I will say, and thank you for offering up that opinion or legal research on fair housing, and please share that and send it to Peter, and he'll share with us. But I really want to, you know, we'll talk to the co-chair of the task force, and we'll have a talk and just, you know, see where we arrive after we have discussions about, you know, how we want to, you know, go forward. But I think today we just had some preliminary thoughts out there, introduce ourselves, and get an idea of concerns going forward. But I will talk to my co-chair, and we'll look at the approach going forward. But, yeah, so by the next meeting, we should be ready to hit the ground running. But if there's any other, if there are any other areas where you think that some expert information might help and you want to call somebody in, please email that information again to Peter, and we will try to get somebody from that department, or somebody is the subject matter expert, to actually come before us and share the information with us. Okay, Aaron Kemper?
I was going to suggest, just in terms of timing and all of that, is that we use the next meeting to look at the some of the impediments that were brought up in the analysis of impediments that we can then use to frame out the next few meetings to look at the specific impediments. So, for instance, as Aaron said, that there's a zoning issue, let's bring in some zoning issues and have an actual meeting about how the zoning issue is an impediment and how that impacts things like access to education, access to places that are not food deserts, that sort of thing. If one of the other things is that Section 8 and the way the Section 8 program is being run is an impediment to fair housing, we could have a session on that, bring in both the administrators, so the governmental administrators, as well as the nonprofits and the other public housing authorities who administer the Section 8 program, so that we will get a sense both from up here and down here of how the impediments are affecting people's access to housing in a variety of locations. So that's just my suggestion as to how to organize our meetings going forward.
Sounds like a good idea. Any other thoughts? Mr. Chair.
Aaron, is it realistic that we can get an executive summary by the 4th?
That's my intent, is to get it to everyone before the 4th so that at the meeting people will have had the executive summary to look at and we can come in and maybe make some choices, because I expect that there's going to be more impediments than there are meetings.
Thank you.
Yes, I would agree with that. But I agree, and that makes sense. So when we joined the legal definition of fair housing in the framework that we want to work within, and then if we group some of what we brought up by impediment, I think that makes a lot of sense. So let's keep that in mind going forward to the December 4th meeting, and I'd like to keep the meeting to an hour, and then what I want you to keep in mind is the fact that how we're going to go forward, how much, you know, because if we're going to really cover all this area, it may be meetings at some point that are like, you know, a couple hours. So I just want you all to keep that in mind. But for the next meeting, we could come prepared to see how we can group all these areas by impediment classes, if you will, and then and put the framework in relative to fair housing and see how all that fits together. I think that would be a good approach. Between meetings, I will send all anything you have to the clerk again, Peter, and he will share it with my co-chair, and we'll talk in between meetings just to further define how we want to go forward, because, you know, it's not, you know, how I feel about it. I'm sure my co-chair here haven't heard what I've heard. I like to confer with him before we actually go forward. So any final thoughts, Aaron?
And I can write something up that sort of lays out some thoughts about moving forward, but I do think that you're right, we're going to want some sessions that are longer than an hour. I also think that we're going to want at least an hour and maybe more, and it should be maybe our next meeting, of laying the foundation here, explaining what the Fair Housing Act is, explaining what the history is, putting everything in context. And then we probably would need a second meeting then to really get into the barriers a little bit more. Just a thought, but I think we have to all be starting from the same place and understanding this issue before we can move forward with solutions. And the other thing I wanted to just say is, you know, I think we should come out of this with a very concrete long-term plan about how the state should deal with this issue. And I think that's one thing as a group we can contribute to solving the problems.
I believe we all want to do that, and we have the co-chairs of the Housing Committee here, so that helps. And we also have one of the co-chairs from the Planning and Development Committee here, so you have the commissions of you have the committees of cognizance that are actually represented on this task force. So Representative Case, do you have some final thoughts?
Just real quick, going off of your point, with the foundation and laying of the Fair Housing Act, is that something that I think you guys would be amenable to it? I'm not sure, but we can work through it on via email and then come to a meeting and be educated somewhat on it of where you think it's going, and then we just don't come in blindsided on it. And, you know, that way the meetings can be productive and we can go forward. If you have the information, get it to us. I mean, I'm sure a lot of us do our own research on things, and I think that'll help us because we have that ability. And if that's up to you guys, I suggest.
No, I mean, there's no secrets here. So whatever we get, we will share. We will share. So everybody will be on an equal setting. So we'll keep that in mind at the next meeting, so we could, you know, have that information in front of us so we could hit the ground running.
Yeah, no, we could definitely circulate things earlier. I think that's a great idea, and I think there are some readily available resources out there. I also think some of the things that are relevant to Connecticut specifically are only going to be in the report, so it's going to be hard to get that all out there before the next meeting. But it might be worth having the context and then having presentation on what's in the report.
And I just like to say, while we're here at the end of October, come next month, well, we're not going to meet until December. In December, the holiday season is going to be crazy. So, you know, we could sit here at this point in time and talk about what kind of commitment we want to make to time and meeting, but I really don't want to complicate and stress anybody else out going through that holiday season. So we'll do what we can and set the stage in December. But realistically, or right at the beginning of January, will probably be the meetings that are really going to be extended, that we're going to get most of the work done. But we should lay the foundation to that in that meeting in December. Okay? Is there anything else that anybody would like to share before we close? Well, thank you. We'll see you in December 4th, 1 o'clock. All right.